morning, everybody. I'm glad you're here this morning. Would you please join me in a word of prayer? Dear God of all the ages, thank you for this opportunity for us to be together this morning. Thank you for the marvelous flips of spring. We anticipate as we are coming into spring, and then you turn us on another path back to winter. How much like life that is. Help us to remember that all good grace, all love, all we have comes from you. Help us to follow your purpose and understand that purpose for us and our purpose on the spiritual path in our human lives. Amen. Okay, well, how many of you can figure out where this first slide is? How many of you know this picture? Nobody here? Raise your hand if you know where this picture was taken. Whoop. Where'd it go? Did we lose it already? There. Let's go back to that one. Yes, you wouldn't know the other one. Which is why I have it up here so I can see it. So how many of you know where that is located? Very good. Okay. So we've had this labyrinth here for a long time, and I love that sometimes we're given the opportunity to renew our interest in the labyrinth and how it can be used as a tool for prayer and for meditation, for healing and for transformation. What we're doing today is the Cliff Notes on labyrinths. And it looks like the audience, we all know what Cliff Notes are, we all remember them. And that's what this is, because we could go off on so many different tangents and spend hours discussing them. So we're giving you an overview, and hopefully we're giving you a tidbit to taste. You know, it's sort of like reading the New York Times book review, and then you have to go out and buy the book to read the rest of it. Okay? Just giving you a glimpse. Does anybody have a definition for what an archetype is? Okay. An archetype, and I have the definition here, an original pattern or a model from which all things of the same kind are copied. And it's, you know, it's a prototype for what else comes next. And that's the Merriam-Webster definition, and also, you know, that's part of nature. If you think about the shell and the spiral, think about the DNA inside of us. Think about the random patterns or the sequential spiral patterns that you see in your life all the time, in nature and in everyday activities. If you opened a bottle of wine last night, you might have used a corkscrew. It's a spiral. How does that spiral translate into our lives? If you follow the psychology of Carl Jung, it's a collective inherited unconscious that we all carry with us, sort of embedded in that spiral DNA. What does it have to do with the labyrinth, though? When you look at the spiral, you see that the spiral goes into the center. And how do you leave that center? You go back out the same way. A spiral is one path. Okay? And here, if you don't remember anything else from today, is the difference between a maze and a labyrinth. Oftentimes in literature and in stories and in art and everywhere else, you can find that maze and labyrinth get mixed up together. And that's not uncommon, but here's how you remember it. A maze is many paths that intersect each other, that come to dead ends, that is designed to daze and confuse you. A labyrinth, like a spiral path, is one path in and one path out. You got that? You're going to be quizzed on that later. So that's the one I want you to remember. As an archetype, we find that the labyrinth shows up in many different places. This has been happening since man started migrating over the face of the earth. That labyrinth, the seventh circuit, we call this the Cretan labyrinth, has been found in so many different places. This is one of several petroglyphs I'm going to show you. And a petroglyph is a design carved into stone. It was a way that Neolithic man, modern man, Homo sapien, as he was traveling, found a way to mark places. Some people think to mark places of sacredness. course, they're not around, so we can ask them, so we'll see.
How big is that?
This one is about 22 centimeters in diameter. So it's carved into the wall, and it's very similar to this one. If you've been to Tintagel in Cornwall, England, this is along the rock faces. There are several of them, done, they think, around the early Bronze Age from what they can tell. And it, again, is about the same size, about 22 centimeters. It's smaller than the labyrinth we have up here, okay, which I've never measured, but not very large. You wouldn't walk it, but you could trace it with your finger. Here's another one in the same area. These two are about 70 centimeters apart on this rock face in Cornwall. Here again also, let's go to a whole other area. These are clay shards that were found in Syria, in Atel when they were doing excavation, and also in Western Messenia, which is part of Greece. Clay shards that they etched seven circuit labyrinths onto, whether for design, whether for ritual, whether for sacredness, we don't know. But they are evident in many places. They also spread out through the Mediterranean, and not just in Greece, but in Rome, they loved doing mosaic designs, labyrinth mosaic designs. This one taken is just an example from Pompeii, but even today you can see many different Roman mosaics that are labyrinths, different shapes that the Romans loved to decorate them. They put them on walls, they used them for, you know, floor decoration, they even put them on ceilings. One of the ways that the labyrinth spread throughout the Mediterranean was through trade. And the silver coins from Knossos around 5000 BC shows that they were imprinting this. This was sort of like their stamp. This is who we are. Because mythology had the first labyrinth on the island of Knossos. We're not going to get into that today. That's a whole other hour program, so if you want to look it up. But you can see the different styles of the labyrinth, and so this was one way that, you know, the labyrinth idea, this archetype, was disseminated. However, they didn't travel to southwestern United States. About this 1100 AD, these were discovered in the Mesa area, the Hopi Pueblo area of southwestern United States, the same kind of design that you saw in the Mediterranean. I'm sure the Hopis didn't, you know, read about it or see it on the internet and say, here it is. But we do know today, because the Hopi tribes still live there, that the square labyrinth is the Hopi symbol for Mother Earth. The symbol used, the man in the maze, which you may be familiar with, is the symbol of man in the universe. And this is a very common design, again, from southwest United States. So the labyrinth, as I said, it traveled with people as they processed through Europe, even as far to the west as Java and Sumatra and throughout India. But today we're going to look at specifically where we find church labyrinths in Europe. And you can see on here that we have Italy in the lower section and a great number of church labyrinths in northern part of France. And then you see a few in that southern channel area of England. But the England labyrinths were outside of churches. The labyrinths in France were all in churches in their various shapes and sizes. But we know that it was very much a part of the monastic and scholastic life in the medieval times, around 10,000 BC, and into the later Middle Ages, when they were building the cathedrals, and Mary Kay's going to talk about this later. We have to remember that churches, monasteries, were also the scholastic centers. This is where the education, this is where the learning was taking place, mathematics, philosophy, religions. And so it was in these places where they were starting to design their labyrinths for a greater purpose that Mary Kay is going to talk about. I mentioned in Italy there are some church labyrinths, but they are not inside the church again. This is one of the famous ones in Lucca at San Martino Cathedral. And if you're over there right now, it's very hard to find, I know from people who've just been traveling there, because they're redoing the facade and it's covered with plastic and you have to search around for it. But here again, this is a finger labyrinth, and it's about 2 feet in diameter, and And you can, here again, use your finger to trace the labyrinth and then trace it back out. And so perhaps pilgrims going into Lucca would do that on their way into the nave. Any questions so far? Okay. Why is it famous? It's one of the few remaining labyrinths in an Italian church, an Italian cathedral, and because it's different than the French. The other thing about this one is that when they carved it, they carved out the walls of the labyrinth, not the path. So it's like a X-ray image of sorts of our walking labyrinth. They did the same thing with the turf labyrinths in England that I mentioned. This is the Mis Maze in Braemore. It's south of Salisbury. You can't walk on this one now. They have it protected because they don't want it to be eroded and walked over and ruined. But here again, they carved out the walls instead of the path. All right, so that gets us to that French conglomerate. You see of all of the...
Is this on? No.
Yes. Now you have to turn on.
There. Is that on now?
Good.
Okay. Barb lets me talk about the Shark Labyrinth. It's very special to me. And I have gone there many times. And I love it. This is the iconic view
have it here.
Of Shark. And it is built on a hill built over centuries. It began, as we know, as a pagan place of worship. And over time, it's been built. But if you go into the crypt, you can actually see a well, and that is part of the very original religious thing that became Chart. And you know, one of the iconic things about Chart is it has two different steeples. One is Romanesque, one is Gothic, because of just having been built over time. The Chart Labyrinth was built in 1201. It has 11 circuits, and it has a six-petal rose center. It's the traditional, it's the most popular design, but they all have the same principle. A journey, a meditation. There are no stops or ways to become confused. One way in and one way out. There are many theories about this labyrinth. This is a really neat picture. It is taken from the roof, and I, who am terrified of heights, have never been there. There's a little tiny hole that you can look through up in the rafters?
Yeah, it's in the rafters, yeah. It's up in the rafters and many
right,
steps.
right above the center, the petals. And one of the theories about the center, you can tell that there was maybe something there. But one of the theories is that it was a plaque, maybe of who knows what. But it was dug up because it was metal during the Napoleonic Wars and used during those. So who knows? But anyway, it's interesting to think about. Another thing that I especially love about this labyrinth is its surface. Having been there that long, and having been a pilgrimage site, which Chart was, people would come and walk the labyrinth when they were not able to get to Jerusalem. So it was their pilgrimage. So the surface, it's kind of made of pavers. It's very worn. So as you're walking it, it just has this really wonderful feel to it. And some say you can feel other footsteps along the way. now, and I will go on with the history of that, but after a time, it has now become available for people to walk the labyrinth on Fridays. So if you're ever in Paris, it's a 1-hour journey by train. You can go, and if you're there on Friday, you might be able to actually walk that labyrinth. Especially beautiful at night, as this is. We were able to go and walk the labyrinth at night after it was closed to the tourists. With lights around it, it's especially exquisite. You can see the blue from the stained glass windows. That's called shark blue. It's not found anywhere else but in this cathedral, this particular blue. And it's just wonderful. So along with Shark Cathedral and some of our ongoing history and the history of the rekindling of the labyrinth, our mentor, Lauren Artois, is credited with rekindling this interest. She is an Episcopal canon at Grace Cathedral in San Francisco. And Lauren was compelled to go to Shark Cathedral to look at the labyrinth there. She'd been to a workshop and things about this labyrinth and wondered what it was and how it might be used as a meditation. So at the time, you couldn't even see the labyrinth. Over time, it just became not something to be used. So it's covered with chairs. In fact, usually it is covered with chairs. So being a very bold person, she and her entourage moved the chairs off so they could see the labyrinth in its whole. And they also took measures of the labyrinth and studied it. And then they took this back so they could replicate this design in Grace Cathedral in San Francisco. And so that is the first labyrinth that was brought to the United States to be used. And she originally had it as a canvas labyrinth, then and outside the cathedral there is a big labyrinth.
Oh, so the public darn.
So she not only introduced the walking meditation back into the Christian tradition, but she also introduced the labyrinth back into Western culture. So that goes on into our history of the labyrinth here at Westminster. And that project began in 2000. Gail King, Sally Lewis, and Barb Myers attended facilitator training taught by Lauren Artois at Bon Secours Retreat Center in Maryland. They then, after becoming certified labyrinth facilitators, borrowed a labyrinth from East Liberty Presbyterian Church, laid it out in the rock, and invited people to walk, and then afterwards to chat with them about their experience, because this was something new. And some people are a little concerned about things that are new, and not sure what would happen. Like, you know, would they get zapped with something? Boom, her, who knew? It was a new thing. So then the group decided that, yes, this was something that Westminster needed and that they wanted. And so the first labyrinth, the 36-foot labyrinth, this one is shown here, was purchased by Westminster Church and was laid out here in the courtyard, which is perfect because after that, that's... Is this?
No, that's North Courtyard.
Okay, anyway.
There was no space for it in the other one.
Yeah, okay. So it was laid out there so people could get a chance to walk. So it was introduced different ways, and then our first labyrinth was dedicated December 10th, 2000. The courtyard labyrinth followed, which is in that courtyard. I'm very geographically challenged. I have no clue. But that courtyard labyrinth was designed by our own Tom Lobo, and it was commissioned by Jane Burton. And then we decided we really needed a smaller labyrinth, so we have a smaller labyrinth, which is the same size as this labyrinth. It has seven circuits instead. And just so it's easier to transport, and we can set it up in smaller settings. So that's the history of our labyrinth at Westminster. Any questions about any of that in our history? Okay.
Other people like our 26-foot labyrinth. It's, you know, very small. It fits into a large suitcase. And we actually have it out on loan right now to which church?
Presbyterian Church in Carnegie.
Carnegie, okay. So it goes on the road, which is really helpful. So, a little bit of the history of a labyrinth. And instead of showing labyrinths all over the world, and, you know, think about, my thought was, where are the labyrinths if I want to go walk one? Not just our labyrinth here, which is only yards away. And I started thinking, if you looked at a 100-mile radius of where we are in Pittsburgh, what kind of labyrinths would you find? And what I discovered was there are almost 70 permanent labyrinths within a 100-mile radius. I went slightly beyond that distance when I put in Erie here. But because Erie is such a beautiful labyrinth, I wanted to include it. So, sort of an overview of the different kinds of labyrinths, different locations that they can be found in, different styles. It's like walking the labyrinth. You have different intentions when you walk it. People had different intentions when they had them built. This one is in the Arboretum and at Erie. And if you've been there, you know it's a beautiful garden space. And it's very pastoral, and as you can see from this picture. So walking this labyrinth, you can listen to the birds, you smell the flowers, you smell the greenery around you when you walk it. A very simple, not quite a day trip, north of us, is at the Kearns Center for Spirituality up on Babcock Boulevard. And this labyrinth was designed back in 2006 also, designed by a local artist and his father from the North Hills. And it's a very large labyrinth. It takes some time to walk it, but it's always open for walking. If you go up to the Spirituality Center, they have lovely signs that take you back to this private, quiet area. There is a road back behind there, so you have to sort of tune that out when you're walking. But you have to allow yourself plenty of time to walk it. But it's worth it because when you get into the center of this labyrinth, the artist designed the center with a piece of petrified wood. A tree stump is what he crafted to put into the center of this labyrinth that his father helped to build, design and build. So it gives you a place to sit. And the first time I walked on this labyrinth, I was a little put out because there was something else in the center and realized that it's not about me. Take advantage of what's there. And after that long walk in, it was nice to have a place to sit. Jessica's labyrinth is on the campus of Chatham College. If it's between classes or a time when the university is not, Chatham University, when the university is not in session, this can be a very quiet place. It's out in front of the admissions building. It's very beautifully shaded in the summertime. It's a very peaceful walk. It was placed there in memory of a woman named Jessica, who also, throughout her lifetime, in a brief lifetime, unfortunately, worked for the Pittsburgh Conservancy and worked to create areas like this, which is why they wanted to put a labyrinth there in memorial. It's not necessarily advertised out for the public, but the public is allowed to come in and walk the labyrinth and nobody says anything. They don't mind that you're there. And here's another little picture of it, and you can see that it is pavers and it is also with the grass turf in between. So a different style. Also, when they redesigned Children's Hospital and put it at the old St. Francis, they designed their foyer entry. This is actually an activity area that they had painted the labyrinth that you see here. And it's designed so that children with walkers and in wheelchairs can also maneuver this labyrinth. Unfortunately, if you went up to Children's today, you probably would find tables and chairs. It's sort of like Chart Cathedral. Sometimes they have it open, sometimes they don't.
But because they have this big meeting space in this area, they do a lot of activities and programs in it also. So if you're there anytime, go and see if you can find it. Many pictures you'll see of it, it does. It, like I said, it'll have tables and chairs and activities going on. Here's a labyrinth I'm wondering if anybody is familiar with. No, okay. This labyrinth is at the Laurelville Mennonite Retreat Center in Laurelville, PA. If you've been there on retreats and taken a hike up to Sunset Hill, this is the labyrinth they've designed. And I love this one because it shows how you don't have to have canvas, you don't have to have terrazzo stone, you don't have to paint. You can take what materials you have. You can take stones from the earth. You can, you know, this one is gravel, which is very nice and easy to walk on. Another big labyrinth. If we go back to Laurelville sometime for a retreat, we'll all have to go up and walk the labyrinth on top of Sunset Hill. But we'll do it before sunset so we can see our way back down to the camp, because that's a little woodsy. Okay, the Homestead Labyrinth was done about that same period of time, between 2001 and 2007. This one was done to commemorate and to honor those who died in the Homestead riots. They had they did not have unions back then, and when the riots broke out in 1892, many workers were killed. Pinkerton guards had come in to guard the Homestead Steelworks down along the Mon River, and it broke out into violent and deadly confrontation. And so this labyrinth was designed with that in mind. And it is near the pump house. You park across the street and walk across. You can see it does have the walkway on here, which I like. And the center design, what design does that remind you of? Can you see it from that side? Does the center remind you of anything? It's not quite like our rose. Nothing comes to mind. Compass. It's the 6 points of a compass. And they designed the 6-point compass to remind us that Pittsburgh was the gateway, and our rivers are the confluence and gateway to other places. And so when you walk this labyrinth, you're reminded that we're always on a journey. All right. So some other places where labyrinths meet the scholastic and they meet the sacred. And secular in between, Allegheny College down in Maryland. If you take the Great Passage on your bicycle, you can get over to the college and you can walk this labyrinth. It's open to the community all the time. Another one, this one is in Akron, Ohio. And this labyrinth was built by a Presbyterian church in a place where the community could have full access to it and see it. So it sort of merges community and church. And the Boy Scout troops in the town, in this neighborhood, helped to build the labyrinth. And so this was part of their dedication. You see the boys have the hard hats on. That's how they got to celebrate the labyrinth. You know, we talk about it being a sacred space. It's also a space for joy. It's a space for whatever intention we bring to it. And watching children on the labyrinth is just absolutely amazing. And then, there goes to what Sarah was talking about, the commercialism of the sacred. University of Akron has a very lovely 12-circuit short labyrinth, and they've got their marching band on it, and the flags. Kind of an interesting use for it, and they were using it for advertising. Applied Akron University. Yep, there's our labyrinth, and we're throwing our flags on it. So that was a bit odd, a bit disconcerting to me. But I thought, well, you know, we all look at things in a different way, and if that's how Akron chooses to use their labyrinth, so be it. If I'm ever there, I don't think I'll wave a flag on it, but they're whatever. How about this one? Anybody recognize this? What's it look like? Does the street look familiar? It's Washington Road and not Lebanon. This is at Southminster Church. Aha, yeah, so hey, that looks familiar. Southminster would be over to the right there, Mann's, and then across the street, the church. Behind you, looking this way, is the parking lot. The library is right behind that. Open again all the time for walking whenever you choose. With this labyrinth, you do have to pay attention that you're going to have street noise, and it's quite all right. But see, now you have to go out to, well, maybe not today. Maybe tomorrow when it warms up. Go find some of these labyrinths. This is an easy one to find. This one I came across not too long ago. Another one very close to us, down in Washington, PA. Cameron Wellness Center is off of Manifold Drive, right before you get into all the shopping in Washington. I love this one because it shows you the Seventh Circuit Cretan-style labyrinth, as it was also done in Scandinavia. They would just take a plot of land, they would take the stones, they would make a Seventh Circuit labyrinth that looked just like this. These are found in many places because it's very simple to use, and the materials don't take a lot of thinking or money. Okay? But a very nice labyrinth to walk, and it's on their path. So Mary Kay and I actually walked it, and the path is about maybe a quarter of a mile all the way around. Sort of a wetlands area, a lot of birds, very, very peaceful, very peaceful. There were also women who were power walking around the outer rim of it, and like, go, girls, we're going to do the gentleman on this side. So, how do we use the labyrinth here at Westminster? Mary Kay is going to talk about how we do use our labyrinth and about some upcoming activities we have with it. And before she does that, I do want to mention, I brought up, oh, let's just stick around a minute. We put up Lauren's books because we use them as reference a lot, but also the Presbyterian Women's Magazine Horizon back in September and October has two very good articles, one about prayer and spirituality and one about the labyrinth. And so we copied this for you and we'll have it available for you when we're done with the seminar. Okay? It often coincides with sacred numbers that you find in the Bible, 3, 7, 9, 11. The center, if you want to count 12 for the 12 disciples, or 11 disciples that were faithful to Christ, is, you know, one of the references they look at it. But they were designed with sacred geometry, so when they were designing the space, they were also using the Fibonacci sequence in order to align the labyrinth. Now, different sizes depending on need, just like different shapes. But if in the hallway up here, past Louise's office, there's a beautiful picture of a three-circuit labyrinth that Don Palumbo designed for a center with children who are handicapped, and three circuits, so it was very simple for them, wide, so that they could be there on wheelchairs also. So it doesn't matter.
The most important thing is that there's one path in and one path out. It's not a maze.
Not a maze.
Anything else? Has anybody had any experience that they want to talk about? Sometimes it's pretty private, so. But I do encourage you, please.
Yeah, not the spiral.
It will be, the labyrinth will be up beginning Palm Sunday, and then we'll take it down Monday after Easter. So you have a whole week, so come.
Yeah, and anybody that's interested in participating with it, it just doesn't have to be Mary Kay and I.
No, please.
We had a committee when we began of 8-9 people. We're always happy to have more people join us if you're interested, you know, in helping to put it out or any of the activities we do with the labyrinth. We welcome you with open arms. And we take field trips. And food is usually involved. So. Okay, well, thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you.